Hello and welcome to TV Break, the PopBreak.com's monthly roundup of all the ins and outs in the world of TV. I am PopBreak podcasting director Alex Marcus, and joining me as always is editor-in-chief of the PopBreak.com, Bill Bodkin. How are you today, Bill?
You know, I'm feeling like one part of a three-body problem, man.
Well, speaking of three-body problems, we sadly cannot say hello to PopBreak podcasting all-star Josh Cernacki.
I know.
He is too busy serving as Shinji Ohtani's new interpreter, which...
Boy, it's Shohei Ohtani.
Isn't that what I said?
No, you said, like, Shinji Ohtani.
Oh, okay. Should we say it again?
Yeah, you should. It's a big difference.
No, you say it again.
Shohei Ohtani.
Okay, because he is too busy serving as Shohei Ohtani's new interpreter to join us, we, of course, wish him all the best as he helps an anxious nation figure out what the hell is going on over there. Speaking of trying to figure out what's going on over there, this week we will try our best to make sense of the sci-fi mysteries of Netflix's three-body problems, the development mysteries of why Amazon just gave Mr. Beast a show on Prime Video, as well as solve the eternal mystery of who won streaming this month. But first, Bill, what was your favorite thing that you saw on TV this last month?
Before I get into that, I just want to verify that my friend Pat verified that the Amazon, ordering Amazon for the Gods anime and the vending machine anime are 100% real, and he watched them. He's like, oh yeah, I know those. I've obviously watched them. And I'm like, what? My friend Josh didn't make this up. Because part of me still thought Josh was making all that up.
Josh would never lead us astray. I had full faith in his integrity. He is, after all, the Steve Rogers of the Bill Bodkin universe.
Yeah, he is our moral compass, I know. But I was so excited. I'm like, Josh, somebody else saw this besides you. And he's not here, so I'll tell him next month. But what was the best thing I watched this month? Alex, it's undeniable. It's X-Men 97. Like,
A
bullet, man. So I did love Shogun, but I fell desperately behind due to personal life. And it's been hard to catch up with a very intensive hour-long drama, but I will. I'm going to finish. When we do our wrap-up show, I will have finished this series. Guaranteed. However, Alex, X-Men 97 it's the water cooler show of 2024 so far, I think, because when I have mentioned X-Men 97 to people, it's not I've seen with some Marvel properties or Star Wars or Disney Plus stuff. Yeah, I'm going to get to it. I haven't got to it. Yeah. It's immediate, like, oh my God, I saw it. I loved it. It was amazing. Or just like, why did this show go so hard? It gets an instantaneous emotional reaction from so many people within that sweet 30 to 50 age range that it's definitely going for, not the 9-year-olds. It's not going for the 9-year-olds. It's going for the oldies. It's going for us gray hairs. But
listen, 4 million people watched it in its first week. I'm sure at least some of those people were under the age of 12.
And let's face it, 4 million people, like, remember when Marvel was like, hey, 1 million people sort of watched Secret Invasion, you know, like,
yeah,
like they some of those shows have not debuted very hotly. And this did, man. And for great reasons. I know you're talking about it every Saturday morning. Pop Break TV, you and Kay Anderson, our new show, Saturday Morning Adventure. I am a company man. but I have to say, like, it's such a phenomenal show. It captures everything we loved about it from when we were kids, but has just put it into like this rich nowness. Like, episode 2 definitely is addressing January 6th. Like, 100%. It is like dealing with even more just very overtly like the current like racism running rampant in the United States. I definitely want people to read Merjani Rawls, who's a longtime writer, editor, photographer for the site, just wrote an editorial on all this, also commenting on Nelson Peltz, his comments about all black and all female movies in Marvel. Why do Marvel has to be so woke? That ludicrous statement he made. Great article by Merjani. Like I said, it's up on Pop Break right now. But yeah, it deals with so much. It's also very funny. And it also is filled with Easter eggs. Like, it checks every box. And it didn't need to go this hard. It just really didn't. Like, we did not need Magneto weeping in the stratosphere, holding United Nation members hostage, delivering a beautiful monologue. It's amazing. I loved every second of it. And of course, this show also brought me in, smartened me up to a cultural phenomenon I had no idea about. Apparently, Alex, you and Amanda and Kay knew all about this. I had no idea what this was. of cum gutters. I had no idea what that was. I asked my wife. She's way more savvy than me. She's like, you made that up. And I said, no. Alex and Amanda said it's real. She's like, wait, who are those people? I'm like, I podcast them with them all the time. So, but yeah, we did not know. But now I know what it is. It's that weird V-shaped abdominal groin muscle area that I have never had before in my life. So I had no use for this information. But now I have it. And it's there.
It's all thanks to Gambit. Let's be clear. That's why everyone we're talking about it.
I mean,
Gambit
listen,
and his crop top.
Old crop top Jones over there. But everything about it, man, even Jubilee being relegated to the background and not being allowed to go on the adventures, I'm just like, you didn't change it. It's so great. But it's wonderful, man. I know you've talked a lot about it, but we have never talked online about it. Well, on recording, I should say. It's wonderful. I love it so much. I can't wait for the next episode, to be honest with you.
It's so great. And as you said, you can hear my thoughts in depth on that Saturday Morning Adventures podcast that is coming out every single Saturday. So I won't go too far into detail here, but I will say that I just obviously agree with everything you said. I think it's fantastic. It's so much better than I expected it to be. It's so fun. It's so sexy. It's so cool. It's so now. It's so hip. It's so 90s. It's
so
wonderful.
Hot right now.
I'm so happy that it's back. And I do think that it's kind of ironically, you know, in the 90s, X-Men the Animated Series became a bit of a phenomenon in daytime, and Fox made the kind of bold move to air this show in primetime for a week to test out adult audience interest in X-Men as a franchise. And that led directly to the green light that the X-Men film franchise got and helped birth the modern superhero movement that we've been living through and seen slowly collapsing during the last year or so. And I think it's so interesting that now, with all of those years behind it, and this new thing coming out is this reboot of the X-Men 90s cartoon, it is kind of serving the same role once again of reigniting interest in X-Men after the franchise kind of became a bit of a toxic asset for people for so long, as the Fox franchise kind of just, like, you know, petered out and Disney took over and all of that stuff happened. And X-Men has just been sort of like a, you know, a musical stinger at the end of Ms. Marvel or Professor X popping up in Doctor Strange and everyone like, oh, look, he's in the chair. Right. So it's like we've been really living off of scraps. And now here comes X-Men 97. And like you're saying, all of these adults, all of those people who grew up with this, LeBron James on Twitter asking how he can watch it, which was great. We love that. And yeah, so it's just like, it's reminding everyone with this 4 million debut week, there's a huge desire, huge appetite for X-Men and this kind of X-Men, an X-Men that is more authentic to the comics, an X-Men that is balancing the seriousness and the fun in a way that doesn't feel like it's embarrassed in the way that some of those X-Men movies did, as we've been talking about on Bill versus the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that.
It's one of the few shows I bugged you. I'm like, you have to watch this the night it came out. You're like, I'm tired. I'm going to go to something. I'm like, no. You got to watch this. Did this with my best friend of 30 years, too. I'm just like, you have to watch this tonight. And
to
he did.
Fair,
and
it wasn't, it wasn't just that I was tired. I also had a fever, but I did still watch it. It was worth it.
But when do I don't often bug you to watch something. I'm just like, this is like, you have to watch this. You were going to watch it anyway, but same thing with my buddy Vic. I was just like, you have to watch this tonight. And he did. And he was like, he texted me. He's like, thank you for making me watch this. I was so on the fence. I'm just so like burnt out. He was the guy who's like burnt out with Marvel a bit. And he's like, this just reignited so much passion for me for this. And I was like, yeah, I'm 5 years late on it. Welcome to the jungle, buddy. Like, you know, so it's great. And I think it's only going to go up in popularity. For sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's that's oftentimes the arc. It's pretty rare for a streaming show to pop hard and then slowly peter out. That's something that probably did happen to Secret Invasion. That's usually a pretty bad sign. For the most part, people take their time to get around to a streaming thing. And so it just builds and builds and builds as long as it's headed in the right direction. And I think that that's where we're headed with this one.
Kay was the most lukewarm on it that I've heard of anyone so far, and he was still pretty high on it.
Yeah, and like, so, I mean, you can listen to our episode, but basically he came on right after he watched it, and so he was still letting those thoughts kind of percolate as we hit record, and yeah, he was kind of like, it was good, but not maybe as good as I hoped it would be. And I feel like by the end of the episode, I want him around to it. So if you're on the fence, listen to the episode. I think you'll be convinced by the end.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
If not by the wonderful remarks of one Bill Plotkin. Now, speaking
of... Alex, for you, yes. Since we don't have Josh. So in lieu of Josh being here, please go listen to Anime Pop, which is his podcast with my co-host on Socially Distance, Amanda Rivas. They do it every month over on Pop Break TV. Go check out their latest episode. It's a great podcast. I've been on it twice. I really love it. So yeah, in lieu of that, we tell you to go check out Josh's anime recommendations, because that's obviously what it was going to be.
Yeah, he would have been like, well, this week it's not an anime. It's a TV show based off of an anime, which is where we've been headed lately. But and it's always good. So you should take his advice because he knows what he's talking about.
Smart guy.
But in the meantime, someone that sometimes knows what they're talking about is the cast members of this fantastic show that we're talking about right now, which is Girls 5 Eva. That's my favorite show that I've seen in the last month. The characters are, if you don't know, it's about a teen girl group from the early 2000s, late 90s, who disbanded many, many years ago and have reformed to try to kind of like get another bite at the apple as empowered middle-aged women who are just starting out all over again. And it's hilarious and oftentimes ridiculous. And it is just a wonderful ensemble led by the quartet of ladies, Sarah Bareilles, Busy Phillips, Paula Pell, and the iconic Renee Elise Goldsberry. This show was supposed to be canceled. It aired two seasons on Peacock, and everyone I know whose taste I respect and has time to watch half-hour comedies, which would not be Bill Plotkin.
Nope.
But if he did, he would, and he'd love it if he did. But
you know what I saw a clip of today from that show? Like, one of them got into a fight with the Property Brothers.
An excellent episode. Yeah.
That was a brilliant clip to show, because it's like out of no matter what the context is, it's like generally hilarious. So I was all right.
That's a great season two episode. So it was on Peacock for two seasons. Peacock decided that they did the head of programming at Peacock made a statement saying that they realized they didn't have the scale to support half-hour comedies, which the internal the communications, the breakdown of that means that not enough people subscribe to Peacock to watch half-hour comedies, which is very strange because half-hour comedy is not really like a niche brand of an entertainment typically.
So, and what NBC built itself on in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s.
And also what they spent almost all of their money getting the library of for Peacock, so that way they could build a whole brand around that comedy legacy that they had. So weird statement, but that's, I'm happy for them. They're leaning into Bravo. They're having a great time. That's awesome. Murder documentaries,
wrestling
far from the eye can see. And then of course, Oppenheimer, which is
Alex, I do have a question for you about Girls 5 Eva. Seasons aired on Peacock. Are those two seasons still there, or have they transferred to Netflix?
So when they were going to get canceled, Netflix came in, saved the day. Rare these days. Netflix oftentimes the villain in the streaming wars. But this time they did one thing nice for me, and maybe just me, I guess. But they did. They gave Girls 5 Eva a new life with a third season, and they took the streaming rights for seasons 1 and 2. So you could go over to Netflix right now and just crush all three seasons of the show if you want. The first two seasons are, I believe, 8 episodes, half hour long. This season was only 6 episodes. I literally watched the entire season in 2 hours on Sunday morning, and I was like, it was the best and worst thing about my weekend because I loved it so much, and then I was instantly upset that it was all gone already.
I feel like it was in, obviously it was on Netflix for today's show. I feel like it's in the top 10 for TV, actually.
It could be. I mean, you know, those metrics are all kind of like wonky, and it's like what that means to me more than anything else is that Netflix is at least putting it in front of enough people to give it a shot, which is what Peacock was unable to do and why it was such an obscure hit, as it were, over on Peacock. So that alone makes me happy. And just, I think it's the sort of thing, if it's from the sort of Tina Fey, 30 Rock legacy, Tina Fey is an executive producer. The showrunner of the show is Meredith Scardino. It has a very similar vibe to like 30 Rock, to Kimmy Schmidt, if you watched the Saved by the Bell reboot on Peacock, which you'd be shocked to know is excellent and really funny.
I saw some of it. Yeah,
it's all from the same Tina Fey family tree of showrunners, and so it has that sort of like silly kind of like live action cartoon quality, and it's also just a deep reservoir of early 2000s nostalgia of the worst kind. Where it's just like, remember how terrible things were back then? What we did to teenage girls? How awful that is! They find a way to make it funny in a way that doesn't make you feel gross afterwards. So, or at least a little bit gross, but like in a way where you're like, well, at least that's not now, or at least that's not us. But I digress.
I think it's the second one. At least it's not us.
There's an incredible joke in this season about how one of the characters played by Paula Pell is now an openly gay woman, but at the time of the early 2000s was deeply in the closet, of course, and at one point in this season they're kind of strapped for cash, and she's like, well, I could call Lance Bass and see if I could let him agree to leak our sex tape. And
then they cut to, I knew that was a joke.
They cut to a sex tape where it's just the two of them are both off screen completely hiding from each other and being like, I'm sexy hiding over here. No, I'm sexy hiding over there. Which is just excellent. So that's the kind of jokes we're talking about. It's very, very funny. It's very sweet. All of these ladies are hilarious. And all of the, and it's a musical comedy. There's so many really funny comedy songs built into every episode. So it goes by super fast, which is a bummer. And I really hope that we get more of it, because it seems like they cut the budget by like 40% and it already did not have a high budget. So I can't imagine that it's costing Netflix very much, but they do amazing things with the little that they're given, because it's just an incredibly talented and funny group of ladies, and the writers behind the scenes are just incredible. It's just like one of those like rapid fire, 1,000 jokes a minute, but also makes you feel at the end of the day. And it's great. It's so fun. I'm so happy that it came back.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to recommend it to my wife. I think she's going to like it. She always is looking for new series to binge while she works.
Yeah. And I mean, Sarah Bareilles, like, I mean, you know, anybody seen Waitress on Broadway knows what she could
do. I've seen the movie.
Well,
two different things.
Yes, it is. Although recently Waitress on Broadway was released in theaters as a cinematic experience as
that's
well.
That's right. What are they called? I always forget like those. So it's
Fathom
just like,
Events.
Fathom Events. It's just like, yes. Come see the opera. And you're just like, and Studio Ghibli. It's like the only two things they do.
Yeah. And what Waitress. It really means is we will not let you use any discounts for these tickets. That's
exactly.
But it would have been worth it. And if you didn't do it, that's okay. Watch her on this show, because she's just absolutely hilarious and just totally taking the piss out of herself. And it's just, it's wonderful. She's pregnant in this season of the show. There's a lot of really good comedy around that. It's just a really funny, funny show. Busy Phillips, just iconic. So, so funny on this show.
She's great. Didn't she have her own show on E! At one point?
She did. She had a talk show on E!
It was really funny.
It was very excellent.
It was a really
and,
funny show.
You know. I mean, it was a talk show on E!, so it was fated to not last.
Doomed to fail.
But the real ones know what it was like at the in the moment, and it was
and
excellent.
And for once, Alex, I'm one of the real ones.
Yeah, that's we love that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break while we ponder what Bill is one of the real ones. Here's some of our other podcasts from the network. We'll be right back.
My name is Anthony Desiato. When I was 5 years old, I stood in front of a comic shop advertising The Death of Superman in its window display. That moment outside Heroes World set me on a path, a lifelong fan journey leading directly from that tattered red cape to my podcast series, Digging for Kryptonite. Each week, we mine Superman's vast 85-year mythology across media with thoughtful discussions about the stories that have shaped the Man of Steel in film, TV, animation, and of course, the comics that started it all. Join us on Digging for Kryptonite every Tuesday, wherever you get podcasts. And for those of you interested in exploring the classic George Reeves television show, please check out our sister series, another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman, an episode-by-episode rewatch podcast. And remember, it's about what you do. It's about action.
Hey, it's Bill Bodkin, editor-in-chief of thepopbreak.com. Join myself, Amanda Rivas, Al Manarino, and a cavalcade of awesome guests on the socially distanced podcast, the flagship podcast of thepopbreak.com.
And it's Amanda Rivas. If you're a pop culture obsessed nerd like we are, then you need to make socially distanced an integral part of your life. We talk all the things, Marvel, Star Wars, you know, everything on Disney Plus pretty much, as well as the hottest trending shows and news in the world of pop culture.
This is definitely Al Manarino and not Bill Bodkin. So listen to the Socially Distanced podcast every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so we can eventually get Disney Plus to give us advertising money. Please, we could use the money. I have children.
All right, welcome back. Now it's time to move on to the biggest story in the world of TV this month, and that means the news that Amazon has signed a deal with one of the largest and most financially successful YouTubers on the planet, Mr. Beast. Now, here's what you need to know about this huge development. Mr. Beast has a YouTube show, apparently, called Beast Games. It's a huge competition show. This is what Amazon is kind of buying the rights to. Although he's allowed to continue his version of the show on YouTube, but he will now also have this show, which is being billed as the largest competition show in history. It will have 1,000 competitors, and they will be competing for $5 million prize. Mr. Beast, of course, his legal government name, Jimmy Donaldson, negotiated the right to have full creative control of this show, which also seems like, so it's going to be, he's going to have as much control over it as the YouTube show, which is also going to continue. So we can get into that. And Mr. Beast will, of course, be hosting it. So that's the deal. Prime trying to get in, trying to get those young kids through the door who are obsessed with YouTube, obsessed with Mr. Beast, not so interested in other more traditional streaming services these days. That I was just listening to a podcast this morning about how all of the streamers are kind of panicking, trying to get young people to subscribe to their service, to engage with their service more, but they're getting absolutely destroyed by YouTube. And this seems like Amazon's big move to try to get those kids through the door. So, Bill, you have a kid who may or may not watch Mr. Beast on YouTube. What do you think about this news about Amazon getting into the reality competition genre?
Man, Mr. Beast is huge, man. He really is. I mean, Sophie is, I mean, gosh, man, I've been through so many YouTube fads with her. It was like A for Adley was a big one. Now it's Mr. Beast. Now it was, there's a couple other ones I can't even remember. They're all over the place. I mean,
ever get hooked with one of those like families where they're all on the on the channel all the time?
Yeah,
just, like, I can't running around at trampoline parks.
FGTV was a big one. That still is a little bit. There's tons, man, and they all have branched out into books, into merchandising. But Mr. Beast is undoubtedly the most popular. He had a burger shop. I remember it opened up in the American Dream Mall, which is this massive fever dream of a place up in North Jersey by MetLife Stadium. Thousands of people showed up to get a Beast Burger, which is just basically a smash burger with like some stuff on it. He has his own candy bars.
I'm pretty sure he then sued those people, and because it turned out that they were not living up to their agreement in terms of the level of quality of the burger. So he was there to get his name off of it.
Yeah, like the opening day he was there and it was like thousands of kids showed up. He's got, like I said, his own candy bars. He was a voice in the Ninja Turtles movie. He was a voice in Kung Fu Panda 4. So everyone's courting to get this guy. He does some philanthropic things. Like he does donate a lot of money to stuff. So
he does a lot of philanthropic stuff. And
so
also,
that's why I'm okay with him, because it's just like, wow, he's done some really good things for people. You know what I mean? He's not just like, look at me, like Scrooge McDuck swimming in my money pool. But
and also not trying to box Mike Tyson for Netflix.
Oh, that guy's going to die. or the other one who's on WrestleMania. But
the guy who's going to, the Paul brother who's going to box Mike Tyson is fated for a
like
very
65-year-old Mike Tyson.
Who, but... if you watched any of his clips, I'm not a big boxing aficionado, but I know when someone is a machine and could hurt someone terribly, he is going to put that guy in the hospital.
Well,
quick.
Netflix is sure hoping that that happens because they are going to be broadcasting that live, and they want that to be as big of a event as possible.
And as like it's going to be scripted real well, I bet. but I don't know. I am on the fence on how successful this is going to be because it's like every kid, like why is YouTube so easy? Is because they grew up with it. It's free, and they can get whatever they want on it. And it's the hip, trendy thing. It kind of reminds me of what TV used to be, right? You know, so, but signing...
That just was so dark for a second.
It really was. It really was. But, like, kids subscribing to a streaming service to watch this? No. Using their parents' Prime? Maybe. I think it will get views based on his... He's going to promote it on his thing, and I bet you kids will tune in. But it's very hard for me to predict here because it is going to be also a version of it will be for free on YouTube. So there's no exclusivity. It's like, well, I can watch a version of this for free. I don't have to sign into something.
Well, and I believe what it is, it's not so much that there'll be like a free version of it on YouTube. I believe it's that... He's going to continue the game show that he has on YouTube, and now he's also doing this separate TV game show inspired by the first game show, but this one will be exclusive to Amazon.
So you know how you just took a minute to explain that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a scene in Bluey where a great anime where an adult's trying to explain something. All they hear is, blah, 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 mitochondria, blah, 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 crab claw. That's exactly what kids are going to hear. So they're going to have to market this thing like crazy because I'd be like, well, I could just watch the free one on YouTube. How is this different? Why do I need to go here?
What I'm curious about is, so this is Amazon, right? And the thing about Amazon, you're saying, will people subscribe to it? Amazon does not need you to subscribe to their service because you already do. Yep. So that way you get discounted toilet paper. So that's true. They don't need your subscription. They need your engagement. And, you know, a few years ago, Lord of the Rings, big show, they spent a ton of money on. One of the ways they tried to get to optimize engagement was by literally putting an ad for that show on every single box that went out to people's homes for a month and a half before the show came out. I'm curious if they would do something like that for this, if this would level to that, you know, because in that case, every time mom's, you know, gets a delivery at the front door, it's going to be a Mr. Beast reminder that he's going to be on Prime soon, you know?
Yeah, I just don't know. I just can't say like this is a slam dunk because like we've seen big splashy crossovers and other things. Like, I just don't know because kids are funny. Like, there are certain days where Sophie is like all in on Disney Plus and she wants to watch it. And she was so excited for Taylor Swift, but she hasn't watched Eras. What's she been doing? She's been watching Mr. Beast on YouTube. But then there are days she doesn't want to watch Mr. Beast on YouTube and she wants to watch whatever. She wants to watch Hawkeye for the seventh time. So it's interesting. I'm not 100% sold that this is going to be the end all be all biggest thing Amazon has ever done. I think it'll do pretty decent, but I can't place my finger on what the pulse of kids are because it's really hard to do that. If you're a parent, like, hey, Sophie just turned 9. Things are changing and I am scrambling to keep up, you know.
It's true. And I think that also I'm sure that Amazon isn't exclusively hoping young people watch this. I bet that they could expose the Mr. Beast brand to the type of viewer who isn't on YouTube and see if there's traction there. And that's the part that kind of interests me.
Because there is a big audience for game shows.
Exactly. And I think that there is, we've seen a lot of dating reality shows hit big on streaming.
Yeah. Our podcasts do really well with that.
Absolutely.
They do.
But there's been lots of like competition reality shows that have been tried on streaming, especially on Amazon, actually. Like I remember they tried to do their own version of Project Runway. They've tried to do this a few times. And I don't feel like it's ever really – it's never hit. It's never hit in terms of – in the same way that the – like it really – they want like dumb, hot, stupid people to be dating each other as part of the competition or else there's just no traction. That's what I've learned.
I think Netflix had a decent shot with Flora's Lava because that applies. Like kids can get into that. But it was.
Right, but that again, like that had a very short shelf life. That was really, it popped, it exploded, and then it like burnt up as lava sometimes does. Yes.
And then the Squid Game reality show really came and went too, I feel.
Yeah, that was one where I feel like it actually ended up – I think people wrote that off a little bit too soon in terms of, oh, no one cares about this. And then it actually did decent numbers for the service. But I think not like Squid Game numbers.
Yeah,
you know, nothing close
and
to
then
that.
The only other show I can think of is that Fit 100 that is on Netflix. It's, I think, Korean. And that
I know
Avni – our TV editor has reviewed that, and that does well.
And Marshall and Courtney on Blurred Watchers definitely did an episode on it when it was live.
So, yeah. So, I mean, like you said, it's more the reality dating stuff. But I mean, look what television's like kind of banking on right now. It's a lot, especially during the writer's strike. It was like a lot of Michael Strahan hosts this game show this week. Hey, Elizabeth Banks is hosting this game show. And you're like, what is happening to?
Yeah. And all of those game shows are entirely geared towards people over the age of 50. Like that is because it's like, remember game shows from when you were a kid? Here's celebrities that you vaguely have heard of. And that's it because you know, it's cheap for networks to put on. And it kind of does speak to this idea of like there's been a big movement in streaming over the last, you know, basically since the strike ended, this big push to shift gears away from the prestige model of TV and really lean into what Netflix was already doing and try to find those broadcast hits for streaming. Try to find procedurals.
There's been
a lot of like hospital procedurals that have been getting green lights by streamers in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
Game shows like this from Mr. Beast is definitely part of that project.
Grey's Anatomy is one of the top stream things on Hulu, and it is
Grey's
every
Anatomy
month
is still on TV. It's
but
just
I know.
Wild. And it's just started its 20th season.
Holy shit! I was graduating college, and that show was starting.
Yeah.
God, I feel old. Oh, I feel old every day, so that's not a point. But I mean, yeah, I it's interesting. Like, it's just one of those things, Alex. When you like, I just can't put my finger on it if it's going to be this cultural moment or that's what Amazon wants. You know, they don't want it to just do well. They want it to be zeitgeist. You know what I mean? Like, you have to put bass in your voice when you say zeitgeist. But yeah, that's what they want. And I don't know if it's going to hit that.
I don't know. And there's a thing about Mr. Beast. Like, he became what he was in large part because he really learned how to gamify the YouTube algorithm. And he was able to then, over time, as the YouTube algorithm shifts, as it always does, he was able to ride that wave and continue to be flexible and find a way to remain dominant in a way where oftentimes tweaks in the YouTube algorithm completely killed very successful streaming careers. So that is a testament to his ability to be flexible. And I'm curious if, you know, Amazon Prime Video is, I think, notorious for having like terrible UI. It's impossible to find anything on that service, even if you want to. And I'm curious if he's going to rise to that challenge and find a way to break through in that ecosystem, which is so different from the YouTube ecosystem. I don't know. I remain kind of skeptical overall because I just feel like we're now 20 years into traditional media, and obviously Amazon isn't exactly traditional media, but they, you know, it's a lot of their TV execs are cast offs from the MGM studio stuff and everything else. So they're definitely part of quote unquote Hollywood more so than other things. And Hollywood has for the last 20 years been trying really hard to turn YouTube into an asset for them, and YouTube always ends up making them look stupid. So I'm curious if this is just going to be one more
gave us
time
Cobra Kai.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I'll be very curious to see if this is just one more time where YouTubers take Hollywood's money and then return to YouTube and just leaves Hollywood in their dust. I mean, you know, we all remember the Fred movie after all.
No, I don't. So
well, I bet somebody does, and it still gives them nightmares. But in the meantime, we're talking a lot about streaming in that news segment, so we're going to move right into our Streaming Wars segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the world of streaming. This month saw an explosion of new shows now that the strike delay has officially receded from the calendar, and Emmy season looms, right? We got their Emmy eligibility window really peaks, like late March to late May, basically early June. So we're right in that zone as well. So with that in mind, Bill, who won your month in streaming?
Disney Plus wins my month in streaming.
Really?
Yes. Multiple reasons why. I feel this was probably their best month in a long time. And
is it because you like the teal?
Well, that was going to be part of my... no, I don't like the teal. I actually like the old blue. But that's just me.
Much blue. Everything is blue now, so they have to do something different.
Yeah, and I get it.
Teal wouldn't have been my choice. I'm going to be honest.
You know, if you're including... You know, you're going to merge with Hulu, it makes sense. So you're going to get this blue-green hybrid. You see, sometimes dad knows a thing or two.
I've been hanging out in the Taylor Swift subreddits for too long.
Those are the subreddits I'm hanging out in. Yeah, no, I don't hang out in any subreddit because I don't know how to get there. But regardless of my lack of internet knowledge, despite running a website for 15 years, is... One, I think that it's both what they have going on right now and what has come in the future, because we've saw an explosion, not just new shows, but of trailers coming out as well. This past week, I mean, it was ludicrous how many, and he was not in any of them, it was ludicrous how many trailers came out. So right now, the fact Taylor Swift's Eras Tour went to Disney Plus and it debuted, and it's just doing gargantuan numbers. It's big. And it's 3 hours, and people.
Bill, you mean the Eras Tour Taylor's version,
and people are like, yes. I know so many people were mad at that. I'm like, well, it's kind of like the director's cut, guys, because there's three extra songs in it. But yeah, that
has a full extra half hour, Bill. They expanded the acoustic
still
set.
Haven't watched it yet, so
you can actually. So just like a pro tip for anybody, they have broken out in the extras section the expanded acoustic set, so you could actually watch just that 30-minute chunk, which was mostly elided from the original film that we saw in theaters. So if you want to, if you don't want to sit through all 3.5 hours, which I don't know why you wouldn't, but if you don't, you can watch that acoustic set separately by clicking into the Eras Tour and then looking in extras for that video.
Alex is telling you this because he cannot come on Socially Distanced to talk about Taylor Swift because our audience just doesn't care. You have that. The Marvels has done very well on streaming. We just talked about the 7.4 million people who viewed X-Men 97, which is one of the hottest shows on streaming right now. We had the trailer for The Acolyte, the new Star Wars property, which got, Star Wars fans are going to Star Wars, but mostly generally popular, a pretty good word of mouth, and I think that's an exciting series coming down the pipe. I'm going to totally botch what I was going to say. I don't know if this happened this month or not. It could have been earlier this year, but time is a flat circle. The renewal of Percy Jackson for a second season, even if that happened a few months ago, still big news. And I feel like all the stuff we're talking about tightening, like Bob Iger talking about tightening the ship, I really feel like this is starting to happen with Disney Plus. We're now getting people are excited for Star Wars. They're excited for X-Men 97. We're starting to get that excitement in. They're not churning out things 100 miles an hour and the content sucks. We're getting this. Also, Elemental is doing very well. Big numbers for them as well. And they also, again, I mentioned it earlier, Bluey, they dropped the trailer for 2 episodes coming in April. And this is big because it is a global premiere of 2 episodes that are extended episodes. So one of them is going to be 24 minutes. This is the first time they've ever released an episode all around the world at the same time. And this has been consistently Disney's highest grossing, highest watched property for almost 4 years running. So this is a big thing for them. And by extension, if you subscribe to the Disney Plus Hulu bundle, Shogun's a big deal too. And finally,
which you can currently watch inside of Disney Plus as long as you do also subscribe to Hulu, because there is that Hulu tab inside of Disney Plus that lets you watch most of Hulu's content inside the app.
Exactly. And there was one or two other things I'm sure I'm forgetting about Disney Plus that was coming, but I just feel like some of that
Doctor Who. We got a Doctor Who trailer and a release date.
Doctor Who trailer, Doctor Who coming in June, and that looks like such a fun run that's coming up this summer.
Can't wait.
So delightful. And I just feel like kind of that feeling, as the kids would say, that feeling's been restored a little bit. Like 2023 was a bad year for Disney. It was BAWD bad. And I think that they're finally, I think they're turning the corner a bit, where towards the end of last year, there was some goodwill with Loki, with Ahsoka, and with What If Season 2. I think they've had a pretty, they're starting to really come around and turn the corner from, I can't say with subscription-wise, but at least with quality of content-wise, I think it's a lot better, and they're hitting a little bit more than they're missing right now. So that's why Disney Plus is going to get it from me, because I think this has been their best current run of shows in a while, consistently, and their best like press for like future stuff coming down the road.
Plus Teal, which we love. For me, I'm going to say my streaming service of choice, not Teal, but a beautiful black and white. And that is Apple TV Plus. Now, hear me out. Apple TV Plus, much fewer subscribers than Disney Plus, much lower engagement numbers than something like Disney Plus. I will grant you that. But I think that they are cultivating a really cool atmosphere that is making them be the thing that they want to be, which is the sort of HBO of the streaming era.
Sure. Right?
They don't need to have all of the subscribers. They don't need to have the highest ratings. If they have the cool factor, if they have the prestige factor, if they have those select interesting projects. And I think that Apple TV Plus has really been hitting well. There was a big write-up in, I think it was Vanity Fair, but I could be mistaken. It was some website. Don't quote me, but it was about how Apple TV Plus is cornering the market on prestige dad TV, whereas Amazon
yeah,
is.
I did see that. Yeah.
Amazon Prime Video is like basic dads, and Apple TV Plus is prestige dads, and you know we stand prestige dads here on Pop Break TV. Thanks to our very own prestige daddy, Bill Bodkin.
I was gonna say I'm kind of like right in the middle, so you know that's why I always put Disney Plus.
I nudge you towards the prestige side as much as I can.
You're not the only one.
So, and in that respect, you know, now you can watch on Apple TV Plus Napoleon and Killers of Flower Moon for free. Finally,
yeah.
Apple was leaving them as rentals for a while, saying you could get it for free eventually. And now we finally are there with those two movies. We got some really interesting documentaries coming to Apple TV Plus in the next like week or so. Girls State, which is a documentary, kind of a sequel documentary to a fantastic documentary from 2020 called Boys State, which kind of chronicles this conference every year with a bunch of high school boys, and then separately this sequel is the high school girls in Texas, where they have to form a full state, full functioning state government for like a week and over the summer. And it, Boys State was a fantastic exploration of like power dynamics and gender and like growing up and coming of age and all of the sort of toxicity in our culture and in our politics, and how it's rooted in this sort of juvenile sense of things. It was really, really interesting documentary that I would very much recommend people check out, which you can on Apple. And now they've done a follow-up. The team that brought you that is doing a follow-up about the girls conference, which is very similar, except it's about girls. And I'll be very curious to see how that conference is different from the boys conference and the different types of takeaways there is there. Can't wait for that to come out. Also, Steve, parentheses Martin, is a new Steve Martin documentary looks really great. And, he's a legend. So I love that that's coming out. We also have new seasons of Loot, a show that we all stopped watching, but it got renewed. So that's the Maya Rudolph show. And maybe the second season.
I forgot that
be better.
Was the name of it.
Yep. We did that. We recorded it on, we recorded a review on that a couple years ago.
Sure.
It's back for another season. I'm going to check it out again because I thought that it had good potential that they really kind of did not follow through with. So it's a very talented team.
Yeah.
I think there's a shot that they could have retooled. If you want someone that a little bit less high stakes, the Fraggle Rock show is back for another season as well.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's very good. Friday Night Baseball, of course, kicking off with the new season of MLB. Of course, Josh will be there translating for the best players on the Dodgers, apparently.
And Alex, of course, will be wondering, hey, what happened to those guys from the 2005 season? They're all in the booth.
Yes.
They're all in the booth.
That's great to know. It just doesn't make me feel old. This is just a show where we talk about how old we feel now. That's awesome. Talk about prestige dad content. But in the meantime, also new shows, Palm Royale, the new Kristen Wiig all-star dramedy. I can't wait to watch that. It's just like cast a mile deep. and really, really cool premise, which I will let you watch the trailer for to find out. Also, Manhunt, new miniseries about the kind of conspiracy to kill Abraham Lincoln and the subsequent manhunt to get the guy who did it, John Wilkes Booth.
Patton Oswalt is in this.
He is, and his performance has definitely generated a lot of mixed reviews, unfortunately. I guess the thing about Manhunt that people are having a tough time with is that despite the fact that it takes place in the mid-1800s, a lot of modern vernacular seems to have slipped into the screenplays and a lot of modern sensibility. So a lot of history nerds are kind of bumping on that. Could you imagine history nerds being a little bit finicky about that sort of thing?
You know, I could see them being a little myth that, you know, John Wilkes Booth has like an iPhone. It's weird, man.
I heard one review was like complaining about that, like John Wilkes Booth, who is of course an actor, before a presidential assassin, that like people were in, I guess I haven't watched the show yet, so I don't know, but the one of the reviews was complaining that like people were coming up to John Wilkes Booth being like, wow, you look so much taller, you look so much shorter in person, and they were like, but what does that mean? Because he was an actor on stage, so like how else would you have seen him but on in person?
At him, you know, if you could be looking up at him and stuff like that, you know, stage, you know, perspective.
But so this is a thing that people are kind of bumping up against, but it also seems like in terms of the historical facts of the miniseries, there aren't any liberties being taken, that it's based off of a nonfiction book and it's incredibly well researched. And I think that's part of why people are bumping up against that, because it's like, you know, you did so much work to tell this incredible true story and then you kind of sullied it with like weirdly modern dialogue. But I haven't watched it yet. I plan to eventually. I also want to catch up on Masters of the Air, which has just wrapped up its run. Yeah. And they did a documentary feature of the real life bloody 100th or 1000th, I forget, about the real life plane people, pilots. That's it.
Plane people. That's
plane
right.
Plane people. Oh, man. My friend who loves planes is going to be mad at me for that one.
No, he will.
But yeah, so there's all that stuff happening. And then trailers, too. We have a trailer for Sugar, which is a new kind of like neo-noir Colin Farrell show. And then a show that exists. It's the Benjamin Franklin starring who else but Michael Douglas.
Who
is, of course, the first person that I think of when I think of Benjamin Franklin. Just like 10 out of 10 casting on that one. But I definitely will watch the first episode of it to find out why they did that. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, lots of stuff happening on Apple TV+. They also, if you haven't been paying attention, they have this kind of rotating group of about 40 movies that they have licensed. And a lot, they're just like, oh, check out these classic films like Salt, starring Angelina Jolie.
I've got
a couple of questions about that. Number one, I don't know if that rises to the classic level. Number two, in terms of quality or in terms of like, is it really that long ago? But I guess
it is.
For some
that
people,
long
the
ago
answer is true. For
well
both,
over,
yeah,
well over 10 years ago, I definitely wrote the review on Pop Break, and I definitely take back a lot of what I said.
I've heard it's fun, and if you want to watch it, it's on Apple TV Plus, or maybe it's not anymore. It was at some point. But in any case, there are free movies that you could watch there. That was kind of the point. And I think they're going to keep trying to expand that as it goes to build out a bit of a library. But we'll see how that goes for them. But yeah, so I think it remains one of the best values in the streaming world at like whatever it is now, like $8.99 a month or whatever. You get some of the best TV out there. You get access to really high quality movies that no one else is making. And free baseball. So, you know, what's better than that? Apple TV Plus.
Disney Plus. My choice. Well,
but your logo's teal now. So, you know.
And now I do knock it for that. Yeah.
That's the cross you have to bear. Speaking of crosses,
not the only one
people have to bear. We're going to move on to our new series spotlight, where we talk about a new series and give a spotlight to it, as it turns out. This month, we are reviewing Three Body Problem.
Never explained it that way, ever, in 5 seasons. So.
Liz, you gotta keep. It's just me and you today, Bill. I gotta keep you on your toes.
I know. He's getting tired, guys. We're going to start talking about cucking real soon. Don't worry.
I don't know. We'll see.
Benedict Wong's in it, so there was jokes already built into that.
This month, we are reviewing Three Body Problem, Netflix's adaptation of the acclaimed novel by Liu Cixin. The series was created by former Game of Thrones showrunners David Benioff and D.B. White. Weiss, in addition to Alexander Wu, who is best known for his work on projects like True Blood, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, and Manhattan. Manhattan, the WGN TV show, not the Woody Allen movie, just to be clear.
Yeah, I was a big fan. I'm a big fan of all the WGN series.
I mean, come on. I thought we all were. Channel that totally still exists. It also stars a massive it stars a massive ensemble.
Would you also see the all-star producers on this too? Is kind of nuts. Rosamund Pike.
Yeah. She brought this project to Netflix, Rosamund Pike, all the way back, like I think 6 years ago.
And I want to say there's someone else pretty famous who's also producing this, and I just can't place it at this moment. But yeah, there's a couple people like, and I'm surprised Rosamund Pike wasn't in this.
I think this was a pure producing project for her.
Pure.
She has a busy slate right now dealing with all those Wheels of Time, you know? So.
Oh, yeah. With that total hit series that no one watches.
It's getting better ratings every year, Bill. Don't
reviewed
talk down.
It for Pop Break. Stop it. I liked it.
Don't hate on the fantasy show that totally exists. Anyway, this show has a massive ensemble cast, including the aforementioned Benedict Wong of Doctor Strange and Avengers Infinity War and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
And
Gemini, which is if you have seen that movie, you are one of 12 people, but it is a very similar vibe to the performance that he is giving in this TV show. And I love that for him because it's exactly what he should be doing, which is kind of like a bit of a schlubbenly sort of like exploding with charisma, but totally does not have his life together. Benedict Wong, which I just love.
You were like the boyish grin that came across Alex's face when he said that.
He's so charming.
He has a very soft spot, a very big soft spot for Benedict Wong, and not usually his type. But you know what? Listen, it makes the world go round. Who knows? The heart wants what the heart wants.
Benedict Wong makes a lot of things go. And I'm curious if one of them is your interest in this show, Bill.
Oh, we got to talk about the rest of the cast, though.
You would do it, man.
Well, yeah. So have you seen Game of Thrones? A lot of people from it.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't have the cast names in front of me because I wasn't prepared to produce this part. But the Onion Knight, Liam Cunningham, he's in it. Our favorite Tarly, he's in it. He plays such a prick and I love it. Also, Elysia Rodriguez,
Gonzalez. That would be John Bradley, by the way.
Let me type in the gosh dang cast so this way I can
I have it. I just was not going to go by person to person because it's so many, but
there are some.
Gonzalez is in it. This fantastic actress,
Baby Marlo Driver.
Kelly, Alex Sharp. We got, as you said, Jonathan Pryce of The Crown and the High Sparrow fame. Also the wife. We'll never forget the wife. CCH Pounder is in this. I have not seen her yet in the first three episodes that I watched, but she is coming, and that is so exciting because she's fantastic. I love CCH Pounder.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah. There's a lot of really talented people on this show.
And if you're into British comedy.
Rosalind Chow plays Wee Wenji. She's fantastic on this show.
And if you're into British comedy, there's a lot of people of the League of Gentlemen and are in it, and as well as cast members you might have seen in Hot Fuzz. I'll just leave it at that because if they apparently have some special guest spots, I'm not going to tell you who they are because it's going to be pretty.
Jess Hong, also very good on the show.
So, Alex, the big question I have for you is.
Did you like it? Is that your big question?
No. Do you enjoy the show?
Oh yeah, I do. It's good.
He's listening, guys.
I've seen three episodes of it so far. Bill has only watched the first episode, as I instructed him to do. I did more than I intended because I was liking it. I was enjoying watching it. It is giving me that sort of. So, of course, it's based on like an acclaimed novel that I have heard so much about. I have a lot of friends who've read this. I'm not like a big fiction reader, so I have not, but I've been hearing about this for a really long time, and I was very much looking forward to the show, even though, you know, the Game of Thrones connection is kind of like, you know,
on the one hand,
you know, Benioff and Weiss did a really good job adapting a really challenging book for many years. And then the show went off the rails at the exact moment that they were asked to stop adapting and start creating. So because of that, it kind of makes me feel like a little bit of two ways on their adapting this book. Because on the one hand, adapting is what they do best. On the other hand, the most recent thing they did was terrible. So it's like, where are we on that side of things? Is it, are they still where they were at the end of Game of Thrones, or are they like going back to their roots of adapting a really complicated novel? And so I will say, after three episodes, they're balancing a really large cast very effectively, like they did in Game of Thrones. Also, I think Alexander Wu was solo writing credit on several of these scripts, and I think so I don't want to kind of like, just because Benioff and Weiss are the bigger names, kind of sideline his contributions, because he really was the one who kind of came in with Rosamund Pike back in the day with to sell this to Netflix. So I don't, this show wouldn't be happening without him in a lot of ways. So give credit where credit's due there. But I think what it really strikes me as, I remember like back mid 2000s, Lost exploding, right? All the other networks are like, oh, interesting. What America seems to like are high concept sci-fi thrillers with big conspiracies at the center of them. And what America actually liked was like a cast of attractive, interesting actors on a beach. But the networks didn't realize that that's what it was. So instead, they launched for like four straight years a ton of high concept, conspiracy, huge cast ensembles with these big mysteries. And all of them, like nothing really came of any of them. Heroes is kind of one of those shows where it actually got one good season before it imploded and then went on to have several other seasons on several other networks. But I never recaptured the magic of the first season. Most of these other shows kind of petered out before their first season were even allowed to finish, like Flash Forward and like The Event and like all of these things. Yeah. Wow. So many of them.
Wow.
It was a solid like 6 years of network programming. Sure. We're gonna do it this time, guys. It's like,
we got it. Yeah, we're gonna do it. Yeah, it's like the superhero adaptation. It's just like, we got Wonder Woman, guys. We're doing Wonder Woman. And it's just like, no.
It's them learning the exact wrong lesson, which they often do. So it's fun to see that recur over and over and over again. But in any case, that's kind of what this show reminds me of, is like a good version of that. Because you have this really large cast, you have this mystery at the center, and it might just be PTSD from all of those shows that I absolutely watched the first five episodes of before either being forced to stop because it was canceled or stopping because it was just not going anywhere. But I am a little bit worried about them kind of like continuing to progress the narrative to a point where it's interesting. But after three episodes, I feel like they've done a good job of like, of building up a mystery and giving us enough breadcrumbs where it doesn't feel like they're just teasing us for a big reveal. It feels like we are learning things consistently as characters learn things and a piece of the puzzle is becoming more and more clear. But Bill, you've only watched one episode. Yeah. So after one episode, I'm really curious where you're at.
You're right. I mean, they Sarah McLachlan the shit out of this thing. if you don't get it, they're building a mystery.
I thought you meant they it put it in the arms of an angel.
No, it's just building a mystery, guy. I don't want to go on my thoughts on Sarah McLachlan and her catalog. She has a good Christmas song with the Bare Naked Ladies, but that's an underrated
Sarah
classic.
McLachlan is excellent, and we will
she's
not
a great no
say anything.
She is a great singer, a wonderful Absolutely. Musician. It's just not my brand.
And an incredible animal rights advocate. Oh. And we will not say anything bad about Sarah McLachlan on this podcast.
She makes you weep, man. She really Absolutely. Does. Regardless, this is going to get cut anyway. So,
nope, nothing is being cut from this podcast because Josh isn't here, so we have the room.
I do miss him, though. I really would. I wonder if he would have liked this. I want to say no.
For me, I think there is like a sort of high concept sci-fi anime adjacent quality to a lot of the stuff that's happening here.
That's
true. So I could see a world where he would be interested in this.
I see a world of, I guess I'm just in a negative mood today. I see a world where it's like, guys, why do you always do this to me? And I love Josh. He's the best. But it's not his brand.
We have watched a lot of high concept sci-fi shows also in our last like year and a half. And with large ensembles and all of that. They've been bad.
But this is good.
This is above that threshold.
So on my socially distanced co-host sometimes, Al Manarino, he messaged, he's like, hey, on Sunday, we're recording this well after Sunday of, and I'd say like we're in March. So it was like Palm Sunday, let's just call it.
We are in March of 2072, broadcasting to you into the past.
Like I said, one part of the three-body problem. So he was like, are you guys watching this? Please stick with it till the third episode. And I messaged him about 20 minutes in saying, I don't need to stick around to the third episode. I'm in. Like,
nice.
Like, I was just like, okay.
What was the moment that hooked you then, if you felt it that early?
When, I think it was a combination of when Augie first sees the, it was just Eliza
Gonzalez.
When she first starts seeing the countdown, I'm just like, okay, that's interesting. And then the prison camp stuff in China, like it takes it to a different level, because I'm like, where is all this going? And that's what I was, it really just intrigued me of just like, it felt like that show. I don't know if you watched it. It was on Netflix, called Dark. Did you watch Dark?
Yes. Oh, my God. Dark is incredible.
I love the first. I didn't. We've only watched the first season, and that was phenomenal.
It gets so much better. The first season is a perfect season of TV, and then it just gets so much better than that. It's like, it's unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. That's a hell of a way to sell it. You know that perfect season of TV only gets better. But I love Dark, and it's giving me sort of those vibes of just like, there's an impending doom, but also kind of a mind bender mystery box. We're going to mess with time travel and life and aliens in the world. And I'm just like, okay, you know what? It has been a minute since I've been in this world. And I think they constructed a world where I want to be in it. Like, I like the Benedict Wong kind of his detective story, even though he's a government operative. I like that part. I like this virtuosity, weird VR helmet reality we're going for. If you know virtuosity, you're an absolute gem. and you're there. But then you have like this whole question of, are they, you know, is like science and God, and is it aliens? Is it God? Like who are we talking about? What's going on? Here's a vast conspiracy. And it doesn't feel like I'm doing chores, kind of like Westworld was, where Westworld after a while was like, okay, guys, here's the mystery. Okay, I'm intrigued. And then it's just like, here's all this homework you got to do. This feels like more of a natural mystery. And I feel like the dialogue is really smart. And I feel like we have characters that feel like we don't know them that well, but I feel like they have existed in this world. Like there is a past here that I can understand and I can grasp, even though they're like brilliant human beings and scientists that I pretty much have nothing in common. But like I could still relate to all of them. There's almost like
we're not being forced to like watch flashbacks of these actors pretending to be 19 in college and seeing how they all first met in a parallel storyline.
Which is great.
Not doing that.
But it's also like they have that scene in the bar where John Bradley is John Bradley, right? He's just like kind of a dick, but kind of in a lovable way. And you're like, we all know that guy. And I, Bill Botkin, am probably that guy. And it's just like, but everyone has a rapport and they have chemistry. And I'm like, this feels right. This feels good. Like, this feels like we have taken time to invest in character and we have barely even met them. Like, everyone is rich within character. And that's what makes this good, because now I care about these people. How is this going to affect them? And I think they keep the science and the timey-wimey sci-fi stuff. They keep it at a minimum and make it a mystery, because they don't overwhelm people in the first episode. And I think so many of these shows have that. We're going to front load the tech. We're going to front load the science. And sometimes it's just too much. And I think get the right balance.
Also, a lot of the times these shows make the mistake of making the people the mystery, right? It's their shared past that they know, but we don't. Or what's the true thing about what goes... And this show, and obviously based off of a book that I'm sure makes the same choice, is smart enough to know that we need to be invested in the people. Mm-hmm. We need to know the people, and then we care about the mystery because the people care about the mystery. We don't care about the mystery because the people are the mystery. That's so important, and that's something that I feel like shows oftentimes get wrong. Now, what I will say, though, Dark is actually a show where the people are the mystery, and it somehow works. So it's, there's exceptions to every rule.
Yes, but also they have really good characters. They're also really rich characters. Like, they take their time with them, and they like
you care about the people.
Yeah, and we don't want to ruin that, because if we keep talking about that, we're gonna be like, hey, remember that? And we're like, oh, nope, can't go back to that. We've already given too much away.
It's true.
But yeah, I want to see more of these characters. I want to see their journey, and I want to see where Weiss and Benioff take them, because I really do. I, like you said, Alex, like, I loved so much of Game of Thrones that it's just like, you can't be that bad. You know what I mean? Like, they, like, they, we all know how bad the end of Game of Thrones was, but it's just like, maybe,
but
there's,
they also really hated making that show by the end, and they really wanted to be done. And yeah, I think that that was clear in the work product, and they seem to be like passionate and engaged in what's happening on the show.
I think it's
that makes me encouraged.
Yeah, and I think,
and
it's,
again, also they have a co-writer in Alexander Wu, who this show is like his baby, so that also makes a big difference.
It makes me want to continue. It reminds me of stuff like even a little bit of the OA, where it's just like this is a weird show. I gotta figure it out. Although the OA,
it's not
wait,
quite as
no,
wild
no, no, no.
as the
nothing
OA.
In the history of man is as fucking wild as the OA. Let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
But I'm, like I'm saying, it's just like, you are just like, this is so bizarre that I got to keep going, because I got to find out what's going on. And I heard episode 3 is just like, whoa, is like a real, is really going to mess you up.
So that's interesting. I didn't experience it that
way.
I feel like
it's been
it's been a slow and steady build. And I feel like every episode we get more information that is both interesting and surprising, and also feels like it's flowing naturally from the episode that came before it. It's not a show that feels like it's building to huge twists and cliffhangers as much as it's like steadily exploring this mystery, giving those breadcrumbs, giving those small reveals that make big reveals, that make us be more interested in the world and feel like we're falling deeper and deeper into something that's exciting. And so that's as good of a recommendation as I could give. So
yeah.
I would say I really am into this. I'm excited to spend the rest of the week watching it.
We know what,
which
man,
is not always true.
2024 TV break so far, we've had a high batting average with good shows.
Yeah. Are there any moms you'd like to fuck on this show before we close out?
Good question. There's not a lot of moms on the show, so I can't.
There's
I can't.
One mom in particular who's pretty cool. I don't know if she's exactly your type in this Percy Jackson kind of way. That sounds wrong out of context.
Yeah, I don't get where you were going with that.
Percy Jackson's mom is someone that Bill likes
joke.
A lot.
The joke of my joke was Percy Jackson and his hot mom was the name of the show. Respectfully speaking.
Of course, nothing but respect.
Yeah, I mean, go listen to Socially Distanced. You'll hear all the thirst on there from Amanda. But, you know, there's no one on the show that I thirst after. But I am thirsty for more of this story. So tying it up in a nice bow. And I want to finish this series, because I think this is like, I got to know what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm down.
Like,
and it seems like we're getting a second season. It's not going to be.
Oh, really?
I
heard that. Yeah. Oh, ow.
I can't wait to see what happens next. I agree with you. I'm down. I'm into it. I'm holding back though. I'm holding back a little bit, because I'm just afraid of, because
sure.
I've been hurt before by shows like this. So I'm holding back a little bit, but I'm really into what's happening so far. And also, we haven't said this enough, but the show looks so expensive.
It really
looks incredible. The cinematography, the sets, the props, everything
The sky mm-hmm. in that one scene, which we're not going to give anything away, where they're looking up into the stars. That's just incredible. And I think the sequence of the countdown stuff that Augie sees, like how they're able to do that without making it look cheesy, I think is pretty great. It's pretty great.
And I mean, we talked about VR, like there is a whole VR subplot that's happening. And I feel like they do a decent job of making that look like really high-end graphics. But not necessarily like photorealistic in a way that might be to help with the budget, but also feels like important for, like, it just feels like that's what a VR game in this hyper future
it
would be like. So
it never felt weird. Yeah. It never felt weird. And it's working on a lot of levels here. And I was very trepidatious about this going into it for weeks on end. Like this was like, I know Netflix like was pushing this in their sizzle reel, and I was like, I don't know, man. And then when you're like, hey, we're gonna do it, I'm like, okay. And I'm glad I've been proven wrong so far within the first episode.
Yeah, it's good. I hope that people check it out if they haven't. One thing we know about Netflix is that they're usually pretty good at getting people to check out their TV shows. So I'm not that worried about that, but I'm more worried about them kind of sticking the landing. But I don't want to concern troll too much. I just want to lean back, enjoy the ride, like Benedict Wong. And until we can talk more about Benedict Wong and others in the future, Bill, that's going to do it for us this month.
I know,
we were fast, in and out. Miss you, Josh. Hope you enjoy your time as a professional interpreter and get back soon.
He'll do great.
Because he's highly skilled and a really diplomatic personality at the same
time.
He's
going to do
like
wonders for Shohei's reputation. Like I said,
I sure hope so, because he needs the help.
He does. World Compass of the help. World Compass of the Pop Break, World Compass of Shohei Ohtani. But Alex, what are we going to talk about next month?
Well, I will definitely let you know that, but first I'd like you to tell our listeners.
He's going
to
pick the show right now. As for me,
what you're up to. What are you doing?
Sure. I'm Bill Bodkin, editor-in-chief of thepopbreak.com. We've been doing this for 15 years. Thank you so much for coming along on this journey with us. I am the co-host of the Socially Distanced podcast, which drops every single Friday on all your favorite streaming platforms. By the time you hear this, we've already heard our 200th episode, which is our Fantasy Avengers draft, which was so much fun. Check out all our Avatar stuff. Check out our Matrix episode, our 25th anniversary celebration of the Matrix. We had an Emmy Award winning producer, Victor Reyes, on. He's my best friend in the last 30 years, so I'm glad he came on. It was a lot of fun. I'm also the Bill versus the MCU podcast, which you can find on Pop Break Today. I do it with young Alex Marcus over here.
What have we been doing on Bill versus the MCU? Please,
a lot of
enlighten
extreme
our listeners.
Watching, and there's the X is capitalized because we're talking about X-Men as we lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine. So right now, our most recent episode that dropped was the prequel films, which is of course First Class Days of Future Past, which is a prequel and sequel, I guess, and Apocalypse. Next month, or this month, I should say, we are really just don't care about self-care because we're doing the Dark Phoenix and New Mutants, but we're also going to be doing a larger new segment to talk about all the Marvel casting news. You're going to hear me talk a lot about Henry Cavill being cast as Captain Britain, which is my big theory, and Alex is like, stop, it's not happening. I'm like, yes, it is happening. The mustache is coming back. We're going to do it. It's totally happening. And then, of course, check out everything else on thepopbreak.com. We are on all forms of social media, except for YouTube. All forms of social media at The Pop Break. On YouTube, we are popbreak.com, all spelled out. Alex, what are we watching next month? And can people find you on the internet and all your stuff you're doing over on Pop Break in the world of podcasting?
Yeah, so I think we're going to be taking a quick stop over at our friends at the Dead Boy Detectives.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be so much fun. Josh will be happy.
It's an adaptation of a classic comic book from DC. The Dead Boy Detective, if you watched Doom Patrol, you would have seen a version of the Dead Boy Detectives, which was actually really well done. Originally, the show was going to be a spinoff of those characters, and then it kind of went through a little bit of a turnaround here and there. And they ultimately decided that no, we're gonna do it our own way, and it's gonna be fresh, and it's not gonna be on HBO Max anymore because HBO Max doesn't exist, and it's gonna be on Netflix. So we're moving back to Netflix, and we're gonna follow the Dead Boys, and we're gonna have a great time doing it. So I can't wait for that. And it's created by showrunner Beth Schwartz, who is a showrunner for Sweet Tooth, a Netflix show that I love that not enough people have seen.
I'm
looking forward to that.
I gotta watch Doom Patrol and Sweet Tooth.
Doom Patrol is a show that you would like. It's wild and weird, and it's got Brendan Fraser yelling and being sad about not being a good enough dad daughter. So that's what we're gonna do next month. Bill talked about Bill versus the MCU, so I don't have to. We talked in depth about Saturday Morning Adventures, which is a new podcast that me and Kay Anderson are doing, covering every episode of X-Men 97. Now, once X-Men 97 is up, we have a whole schedule planned for other hosts to come on and talk about other great animated series of past and future fame. So that is going to be a show that's going to keep going after X-Men 97. So if you're like, it's kind of cool idea, but I just don't care about X-Men, watch that spot for after X-Men wraps up. And you can follow me on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Alex Marcus. on Batman by the Numbers podcast, Dan Cohen's podcast all about Batman. We took a break from talking about Batman last month and instead talked all about Christopher Nolan, which let us talk a little bit about Batman, because we did a four-person ranking of every single Christopher Nolan movie ever. All 12 movies are discussed. It's a 3.5-hour long podcast, but it's really fun. You should listen to it anyway, even though it's kind of long.
Was there a consensus number one?
So basically, I won't reveal what the number one is, but what I will say is that the number one, out of the four of us, two of us voted for it for number one, and the other two voted for it for number two. So that's pretty close to consensus as you can get.
Who knew everyone loved Insomnia?
I won't reveal where Insomnia shows up. It might surprise you.
I'm going to go last.
But yeah, no, Dan and I were on there with the great DJ Chapman of Roses and Rejections and the wonderful Manish Mathur of It Pod to Be You. He had a great episode on Inception for his podcast, which is mostly about romantic films. He did a whole bad romance episode on Inception, covering it as one of the best breakup movies of the 2010s, which is a wonderful take that I love so much and very, very true to the film. So that's why he got invited to our podcast to talk about Nolan. He crushed it. It's a really fun discussion if you care about these movies, if you've like lived in the world for the last 15 years while he kind of reigned supreme. You should definitely check it out. It's really fun. And yeah, so that's going to do it for us. We'll be back next month talking about some Dead Boy Detectives and lots of other fun stuff. Until then, Josh, we miss you.